I'll tell you what, I'm bored with doing the introduction. Rob, why don't you introduce me?
You want me to introduce you?
Okay. Yeah, why don't you do, you know, the ladies and gentlemen, the James Whale radio show. Why don't you do that right at the beginning of the program?
Well, you've just done it now, so...
No. Oh, dear. Oh, well, I've had one of those days. I haven't had enough sleep with this new puppy. Keeping me awake is Daisy May, I must admit.
This is the longest intro going.
We haven't done it yet.
Oh, okay.
No, you do it. You do it.
Okay, ladies and...
Right. No, do it properly. Do it sensibly.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen... That sounds ridiculous. Do it properly.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, please be upstanding for Mr. James Whale.
You twallop. Sorry about that. Listen, I thought I would give Robbo a chance at doing something entertaining and interesting, and quite frankly, you messed it up again, didn't you?
I was doing what all the tea boys do, deliberately make the tea bad so you don't have to do it again.
Yeah, well, not only do you do that bad, you do the tea bad as well. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Well, listen, if I wanted to go and have a couple of days off, I thought you could do the show.
Oh, I could do that, yes.
Yeah, oh, could you?
Yes.
Well, you can't do the introduction. How can you do the... Oh, never mind. I tell you, the postman is going to come in a moment and he's going to put stuff through the door and my dogs are going to go mad any moment. Oh, look at those brown envelopes. I wish they'd stop. Why send me brown envelopes?
When people send you mail now, they should cover it in food.
Yeah, but that was the quiet... You didn't hear that, did you?
No, I didn't. Has it arrived?
Yeah, that was the quietest mailman delivery I've had for ages. Even the dogs haven't heard that, which is quite lucky. Because if Daisy starts, goodness only knows what we're going to have to do. Anyway, listen, welcome to the show. James Whale on the James Whale Radio Show, coming out of your favourite radio station, coming out of your favourite computer, your Android, iPhone, or what else do you come out of?
Your speakers and your headphones.
Your speakers and your headphones, yeah. So wherever you are, whatever you are doing, nice to have you with us. And this is the 100th and...
Fifth.
I've lost count. Flipping heck, 105 hours. So if you get fed up with this program, then just go and download a couple more. So here we are on the week where Coronation Street went live, and they probably rather wish they hadn't. Apparently it was a bit of a car crash. I didn't see it, did you?
I did see it, and there was no car crash. There was a car that caught fire, though.
Was there?
Hmm.
That must have been what people were talking about when they said there was a bit of a car crash, mustn't it?
Yes.
Could you tell it was live?
Yes, there were a few sort of stuttered moments where they were waiting to move, if you know what I mean, and then action.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. What would they have done back in the day?
The same thing, I would imagine.
Yeah. I'm not actually sure what benefit it is for the viewer or anyone else if you do a live show. I mean, what we're hoping, if we watch it, we're hoping there's going to be major cock-ups, aren't we?
Yeah, there was a few in the EastEnders one, wasn't there?
Well, no, the EastEnders didn't do it live, did they? They did a few minutes live, and you saw a little thing come up on the screen and say, it's live, and then they didn't do any more.
Oh, that's a bit misleading.
Well, yeah, I think it's a bit misleading as well. But so I don't know. I don't think the whole thing was live yesterday, was it?
I think it was. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm brain, but maybe it's worth. But it wasn't. There wasn't anything that really was worth watching. No, nobody's sort of knickers fell down or anything like that.
Somebody got killed.
Yeah, but that wasn't real, you dingbat, was it? That's all in the program. That's just make believe.
How can you make believe killing someone live?
You know, they didn't really kill them. That was all part of the theatre, all part of the storyline. It's not real, is it?
And then they wrapped him in a duvet and stuffed him down a drain.
Yeah, but they didn't really, did they? It's make-believe, don't you understand?
It looked like a real drain to me.
Oh, for goodness sake. I know you live in Wales, but that's no excuse. That really is no excuse. Did the version you saw actually, was it in Welsh? Was it dubbed in Welsh?
No, it wasn't. It was that they don't dub Coronation Street in Welsh.
Do they not?
No.
Well, how do the Welsh speakers actually understand it then?
Subtitles.
Ah, so they put it on the subtitles. Oh, that's interesting. I wonder how they do that with a live... They must have given them the script beforehand, mustn't they?
Yeah, or they can do it live, can't they? They do the news live, don't they, with subtitles?
Oh, do they do the news with subtitles?
Yeah.
Such a long time since I've been in Wales. Well, in that part of Wales, anyway. You must be one of the few English people there.
No comment.
Do you want to talk about the... No, you probably don't, do you?
No, I don't. No, definitely not.
No, because you get all sorts of abuse if I start talking about Welsh stuff, don't you?
I don't get any abuse.
Don't you?
No.
Who gets the abuse?
Well, I read your emails. Anyway, can we move on?
You want to move on?
Yes, please.
I was having such a good time with this, so if you want to move on, let's move on, by all means.
We've got a show to do.
We've got a show to do. So what are the main stories in the news today, then? Or this week? Or what happened? Well, I suppose we can't do a programme without talking about poor old David Cameron.
I think I feel sorry for the pig.
Well, the pig was dead. In real life, the pig was dead, apparently. But this is all supposition, because this is, nobody knows. These are the musings of some chap writing an unofficial book, and there's no definite proof that any of this ever happened. Just alluded to, if you see what I mean.
We'll all have to just use our imaginations.
Well, no, it's just a ridiculously stupid thing to go on about. I mean, haven't we all done strange things in our past? I mean, you do strange things now, don't you?
Maybe.
You know, people got upset about me tweeting pictures of the fact that my dogs sleep on my bed. Lots of people get very upset about that.
Why?
Well, apparently it's not a normal thing to do. So now to get over that, I say it's a ritual that I have to go through. You know, so it's... But didn't you ever at school get, I don't know, did you do something silly or say something silly to somebody that you rather wish you hadn't?
The only thing I remember from school is throwing a paper aeroplane out of the Welsh lesson window.
Mm. You see, that's interesting enough. I don't believe, actually, if any of us could put our hands on our heart and say we haven't done something in a former life which was a bit silly.
I've done a few things that are silly, and I'm not sure that I'm going to talk about them.
Oh, right. I'm embarrassed. Poor old Rob. You are, after all, only the producer, aren't you, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, when you complain about the show, you email jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. And as you should, if you have any complaints or anything you want to know about this program, email me, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. And who will you get to speak to? You'll get to speak to Rob.
And I'll forward all the good ones, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Now, we actually put out on Facebook, have you done something in your past you don't talk about, i.e. anything strange with a pig's head? And Chris says, yes, I once voted Labour. Ah, satire is not dead. That's good to see. Bex Page says, yes, plenty. I have a few skeletons in my cupboard. I'm frightened to open the door in case a whole graveyard falls out. David Starr says, yes, 3 times, but I divorced them all. Everybody's got a sense of humour. It's good to see that gets in touch. Joseph Markey says, I was a bad boy once. I took a pound oot me grandmother's purse without her permission. You deserve to hold your hand out and get a slap, doesn't he?
I think all kids have done that, though, haven't they, really?
What, nicked a couple of pennies, a pound or something out of your grandmother or your mum's purse?
I think so, yeah.
How many of us nicked a sweet from the sweet shop on our way home from school?
Margaret Harrison did, if you read her comment.
Well, I was going to bring that up in a moment, but why are you reading my script? Yes, Margaret Harrison said she used to steal sweets from Woolworths Pick and Mix as a child and then adult, in fact, until the chain closed down. Well, Margaret, quite frankly, I think we should give your details to the police, because it must be you who actually caused the demise of that great chain of stores, Woolworths. And lots of people miss them.
You can still get Pick and Mix.
Yeah, but a lot of people miss the fact that you went into Woolworths. It's not big, clever or anything else to go and pinch things that don't belong to you and shouldn't do it. And I'm not making this an excuse for it either. But the point is, how many of us have actually done something that really we'd be quite offended by if we found somebody else did it? And that's the point, really. So the fact that we've got huge problems with migration and everything else going on in the world means that we needed something to take our mind off that. So I suppose this is what the story is.
What will it be next week?
I'm just asking you questions just to see whether or not you're listening to me, because I know you've had one of those days where your mind seems to be wandering a lot, doesn't it?
I can't wait to get to Tech Talk.
Why?
Because I'm going to have a rant.
Oh, good. Well, we'll save that for a bit later on, if you don't mind. Nikki French says on this subject, I am writing a book on my exploits, and I'm not leaving anything out. If it gets published, James, you can have a signed copy. Well, thank you, Nikki. That's very nice. And if it gets published, you can have a signed copy of mine as well. I think, to be quite fair, I actually think David Cameron came out of that whole thing quite well, really, didn't he? In fact, it seems to me, talking about it in various places and to various people this week, that most people thought, leave him alone. It's something we've all done, these things when we were younger. And of course, it coincides, does it not, with Freshers' Week at university. Is it Freshers' Week this week or next week?
I don't know, but there's a lot of students running around the place at the moment.
That's exactly it. And though that's the time when you probably do something during this first couple of weeks of going to college or university, and you think that, I kind of wish I hadn't done that. You know, stripping off and running naked through the town centre was not a good idea.
Or running across Menai Bridge when you're drunk once. Oops.
I beg your pardon?
Nothing.
I missed that.
No, I didn't say anything.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. All right. Anyway, nice to have you with us today. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch, as I said before, just email james.whale@gmail.com. And if you've never checked out the website, all sorts of stuff on the website to look at, old programs, videos. Got loads of stuff up there, haven't we? We introduced a new feature of the program during the week, which is James Whale's phone box. And you can ring a number that is on the screen. If you go to the website, jamesworldradio.co.uk, and some people have. And we're going to play a couple of those, aren't we?
Yes.
Oh, hi, James. This is James Stevenson. Just bringing you up to say thanks very much indeed for playing my song, Susie's Problem. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Hello, this is John Cooper. Just read your post on Facebook, so quick joke. Jeremy Corbyn is still the leader of the Labour Party. Oh, wait a minute, that's not a joke. Oh, actually, yes, it is. Bye for now.
Hi, I can't believe I've just got through to the James Whale show. Wow, it's awesome. I just can't wait for the next podcasts. I listen to every single one of them. Just one day, you could actually do an interview on me. Or no, just keep it going. It's awesome, and Rob is, I don't know, it's very dry, but it makes me giggle the way that he puts his oar in every now and again. Okay, then. Keep up the good work. Thank you. Goodbye.
So there we are, some of you that called in over the week. And if you want to talk about some of the news stories, it may be a news story that you want to start off and hear me talk about. Call me 0117 230 1771, 0117 230 1771, and leave your message there. What we need for that, Rob, by next week is a sung jingle.
I'll get one ordered now.
0117 230 1771. Call James. Done.
Cancelled order.
Done, dusted. Yeah, done and dusted. So, anything in the news that you want to talk about, absolutely, get in touch and let us know. Now, we've got a special guest coming up on the programme who I'll keep that secret for a moment. Should we do something else about here? Should we talk about this plastic bag tax that's being introduced in a couple of weeks' time?
Yes, go on then.
Does this happen in Wales and Scotland? I'm not sure.
It's happened in Wales for the last couple of years.
No.
Yes.
What? So you have a tax on the... So when you go into a store, a big store, I think it has to be a store that employs over a couple hundred people or something.
Nope. Every store.
Every store?
Every store in Wales, 5p for a bag.
And so do they offer you the bag or do you just have to pay it?
They say, would you like a bag? It'll cost 5p.
All right. And the money, where does the money go? Do we know?
Technically, the money, or a large bit of it, should go to a nominated charity.
Yeah.
But realistically, nothing goes to charity.
And VAT is chargeable on that 5p, is it?
I would imagine so, yes. I suppose you could charge VAT on the bag, yes.
Well, Philip Heathcote says that's an enormous £19 million windfall for the government.
So I suppose...
Really?
Yeah, but, well, the government is a charity at the end of the day, I suppose, so yeah.
Well, actually, think about it this way, Philip. It's kind of like giving money back to ourselves, isn't it?
That is very true, actually, yeah.
Because, you know, I don't profess to do a lot of shopping, but Mrs. W, when she allows me to go with her, and strangely enough, and I've never been able to work this out, I don't know why she doesn't like me going, but she doesn't. She would rather I didn't have anything to do with the shopping. Apparently, I put things in the supermarket trolley that we really don't need.
Like nice food?
Yeah, chocolate. Biscuits, cake, you know, that sort of stuff. But the money is coming back to it's us, isn't it? It's our money. So we're paying it, but actually it's going into the coffers of the government, which goes to look after the country. So it's a bit like giving money back to ourselves, isn't it?
It is. Everyone asks for a bag, though. It doesn't really work.
Well, if you ask for a bag, you pay for it. Is that right? That's what's going to be happening in the rest of the country in a few weeks' time.
It's not good for crime either.
Why?
Well, because you're walking out the shop, you know, your clothes shop, with expensive clothes, not in bags anymore.
Mm. No, no, no. As far as I understand it, it's only large supermarkets.
Not in Wales. It's every shop.
Well, you go in and buy a suit, right?
Yep.
That suit would have to be put into a suit bag.
Yes, maybe. Not all the time.
Well, it would. It would have to. And so, therefore... I can't think they're going to turn around after you spent a couple hundred quid on a suit and say, oh, by the way, that's 5p.
If they don't, they get a fine.
It's, really?
It's a few thousand quid.
I don't know much about what happens in Wales, but that sounds ridiculous to me. Jeff Samuel says, just think how much money could be made by standing outside Asda or Tesco and selling a bag at 0.03p. You can buy 1,000... at 0.05p a bag. Profit in one day, about £300. Well, that would more than pay for this programme. Now you know what you're going to be doing.
You want me to go and sell bags?
If you can buy 1,000 bags at 0.05p a bag, per bag, and sell each bag, never mind selling it for whatever, what did he suggest? 0.03p a bag. I don't know how you'd work that out. But... if it's 5p in the supermarket, okay, you sell it for 1p.
Oh, hang on, no. I'm reading it now. It's 0.03p is actually probably 3p, isn't it? So it's £0.
Is it?
And so it's like 0.5 of a p for a bag, and he's selling them at 3p a bag, undercutting the store by 2p.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to suggest, but the way this has been written, it looks like it's 0.03p a bag.
But you could only buy one bag, technically.
Right, that's a very good point, isn't it?
Because you'd have to put the bag in the bag, and then you'd be charged 5p for the bag.
Who typed these emails off?
They're just copied and pasted from your Facebook wall.
Are they? Oh, yeah. Right. Okay, well, Jeff... that's confusing. So 1,000 bags, you can get 1,000 of those shopping bags for 5p.
No, half a pence.
Oh, half a pence.
Yes. 0.05.
Right. Oh, okay. Oh, yes, I see. Yes, but I notice where the decimal point is now.
Yeah.
That's my fault.
It's all in the decimal point.
It's all in the decimal point, right. Okay, so half a penny for 1,000 bags.
Well, no, half a penny each.
1,000 bags, half a penny a bag. All right, okay. And if you sell them at 3p a bag, that's £300 a day. Well, I still think it's worth doing, isn't it?
Yeah, now we've ironed out all the math, yes.
Yeah. I'll forget that then. Just we'll edit that whole thing out of the programme. Colin says, we don't need to tax plastic bags. Just do the same as France. In their supermarkets, they do not give bags. You either buy a bag for life or you go without. That's absolutely not right. I was in France a couple of weeks ago, Colin, and they do give you plastic bags. And, of course, the people go around the supermarket in France with their own bag, putting stuff in their own bag. And then they take it out when they get to the checkout. Everybody's much more relaxed, aren't they? Imagine doing that. Imagine going around the supermarket with your own bag and filling it up. Barry Bazza says he refused to pay unless they provide a plan, plastic bag, or charge them for advertising their supermarket. Okay, I think, Barry, you'll probably find yourself holding up the queue and lots of people yelling at you quite a lot. We might come back to that. So lots of thoughts on plastic bags. When it happens in a couple of weeks' time, I bet there's going to be an enormous outcry in England anyway. I'm not paying 5p for a bag. I've spent all this money in the shop. I'm not paying that. I could just see it.
You could, of course, absorb the cost.
Could you?
Yeah, you know when they come up to the counter and they go, can I buy this coat? It's £300. They'll go, would you like a bag for that, sir? And you go, yes, I would like a bag. They go, in that case, it's £299.95 because you've had a special discount for being a good customer.
You see, there are all ways of getting around it, aren't there? Yeah, jolly good idea. What a good idea that is. Right, Rob, now I think it's, you know, one of the things we don't have on this programme often enough, okay, is culture.
Right, okay.
Okay, and I think we need to put that right. So I've decided today's guest is going to be a lady who, from time to time, I will review the newspapers on Sunday morning on Sky Television with. In fact, a couple of weeks we did this. Former arts critic, I think, of the BBC, or arts correspondent of the BBC. You'll know her when you see her, and you'll definitely know her voice. And so what I'm going to do, in order to get her to come on and do the interview, right?
Right.
I've had to tell her this is a very cultural program.
Okay.
Right. So it's a very cultural program. So you just keep quiet while I chat to Rosie. But what I'll do, she's just written a novel called The Square. And apparently there's a lot of sex.
Is it EastEnders?
No. I know, but she hasn't sent me a book. I haven't read it. But apparently there's a lot of very salacious stuff in it. So we'll chat about the culture. We'll do all that. And then we'll try and get on, see if we can coax her into describing maybe one of the sex scenes in the book.
Right.
Give her a call now. Let's get her on the programme.
Sitting in my room and I'm on my own. It's cold outside and I'm feeling alone. So I turn that dial and my radio's on. I hear James Whale and my troubles are gone. I hear James Whale on the radio. I hear James Whale and his podcast show. I hear James Whale on.
Now, here's somebody that from time to time I sit on the Sky News sofa with, Ms. Rosie Millard, who at the moment is talking to me from the foyer of a hotel somewhere. Where are you?
I'm in Hull. I'm in the lovely city of Hull, and I'm at the Royal Station Hotel, where Queen Victoria once visited and sat on a chair. And this hotel is also made very famous by Philip Larkin, who wrote about it in his poems and also would sit here from time to time because he was a librarian at the university here for 30 years.
Now, tell us all why you are in Hull, Rosie. Why have you decided to go to Hull?
Well, I'm chair of the City of Culture 2017. The City of Culture is an £18 million bandwagon juggernaut, which is going to roll into Hull in 2017, and I'm very, very privileged to be looking after it. I came to university in Hull, and I love the city, and it's a real privilege to be in charge of what will be a cultural regeneration, and hopefully inspire a lot of inward investment in the city, and also be a wonderful party for everyone in the city and the nation.
I've been to Hull many times, but lots of people wouldn't think of Hull as their first choice of a city break weekend, would they?
Well, that's one of the reasons why it's won the designation of City of Culture. And one of the things is to renegotiate or relook at the tourist offer, so that when people come to Yorkshire for the week, they'll think, oh, do you know what? Instead of going straight to Harrogate and shopping in Leeds or whatever, they say, oh, we'll go and see that city with that lovely bridge, or that city with that amazing art gallery that we now know about, to sort of remind people of Hull's hidden delights. I mean, it is a rather extraordinary city, and it is very isolated, which means it has its own culture, but it also means that not many people know about it. So that's absolutely one of the reasons why these cities of culture are chosen. They're typically cities that have had quite a tough time of late and could do with a bit of injection of attention.
And of course you can go and stay in the hotel where Rosie is at the moment. All right, and you're dashing off. I know you've got a meeting in a bit, so let's go through some of Rosie Millard's stuff. Now, Rosie, you were full-time working for the BBC for quite some time, weren't you?
Yeah, I was the arts correspondent for 10 years. I did. I covered radio and television and online when it turned up, and 24-hour news when it turned up. And it was just a joy. It was such fun. I did some of the Oscars and Cannes and the opening and the building and opening of Tate Modern. I was lucky enough to be in the role during the kind of rise and dominance of the young British artists. So, Damien Hirst and Tracy Emin et al. And at the time when, that was very, very exciting and people really got interested. Damien Hirst turned up on Top of the Pops. I mean, when before was a contemporary artist on Top of the Pops? So there was a real kind of debate going across the nation about whether these artists were worth it and whether they were interesting. And it was very exciting to cover that stuff. I also was in the role during the advent of the lottery. So I covered all the sort of rows about money going to the Churchill Papers and the Royal Opera House. And I would typically be in a hard hat one year and then covering the opening of a new exhibition space or gallery or theatre 3 years later. And that was very, very thrilling.
Why did you decide to move on from that?
Well, I had three children at the time. I went back to work when they were all absolutely tiny, and I had to really focus on getting a kind of decent, getting someone to look after them was difficult because, I was away a huge amount of time. And I also love writing, and I had I was writing for newspapers, and I just thought, actually, after 10 years, I thought, I've had a really fantastic time, but it's probably now time to move on. I wanted to have another child outside the kind of the necessities of working in the newsroom, and I wanted to do some more writing. So I did that. I went to a magazine called New Statesman as the arts editor, and I also did a history of art degree, and I had another baby. So
yeah, so that's four babies, history of art degree. I always find on Sky when we do it together, you're very annoying because you know everything about everything.
Well,
gosh,
not sure about that. But I have an opinion about most things, but James, I follow the master in that. It's good banter, isn't it?
Well, I enjoy it, I must admit. And as a sort of professional lovey living in Islington, round the corner, I assume, from Jeremy Corbyn, how is life changing?
Well, interestingly, I mean, Jeremy Corbyn and Emily Thornberry, both Labour MPs, they are the MPs for Islington. They both came back with a hugely increased majority in the constituency. Islington is an interesting place. It was bombed very badly in the war because of its proximity to King's Cross. It was targeted. In fact, there were barrage balloons sent up from the square where I live. Doughty little Thornhill Square defending mighty King's Cross. And so as a result, the neighbourhood is very, very mixed. There are people living of huge wealth next to people of very modest income. And that means that the needs of the borough are multiple and complicated. I think they're very good. They're both, Jeremy and Emily, are very good constituency MPs. And I think it's rather good that Jeremy Corbyn is in charge. I would have voted for him if I'd been able to. And I think some of his ideas are very refreshing. I mean, I think re-nationalising the railways, what a brilliant idea.
Was your trip to Hull not very good today, then?
My trip to Hull was lovely, as it always is. I roll along the side of idle Humber, tidal Humber, as Andrew Marvell put it, and you go past the Humber Bridge, which is a miracle and a wonder. But I think that, you know, I came up on first Hull train. It's a different company from Virgin, which also trundles into Hull. It's a different company from all the other East Coast trains. You know, I think it's a bit mad having so many different trains, and the track is owned by someone else, and the station's owned by someone else. So, you know, I mean, certainly the way of buying tickets, the manner of buying tickets is bewildering in the extreme. And I think it would be much simpler if it was all just smoothed out and brought under one thing. I mean, there's only one railway service, isn't there, in this country? I mean, there are many services. There's only one track, it seems to me. And it seems to me that it would be much better if it was owned publicly.
Let's talk a bit about culture, if you don't mind. Not something I know an enormous amount about, as you often tell me. How important, in these times of austerity, when people have a lot of problems in their lives, how important, because a lot of people don't go to art galleries, a lot of people don't know much about classical music or ballet and stuff like that, lots of people don't know much about history. Why do you think it is worth going on banging on about it?
Well, I think that it's very, very important. And I think that if you look at the attendance figures, something like the British Museum, you know, 6 million people go and visit the British Museum every year. It's free. Tate Gallery is free. The National Gallery is free. And actually, it's not just people with art degrees who you will find there. You will find people of every age, culture, and creed in those great temples to culture. And I think that you're wrong. I think that people really do take huge solace in culture, in art, in beauty. They find it speaks to them. And, you know, I think that there are many different levels of entry, as it were, into culture. I mean, take the advent of Classic FM, interestingly, whose former chief executive now runs the Arts Council. You know, Classic FM is a really interesting radio station. It provides classical music, and it's hugely popular. People do like listening to the classical greats, and they like going to see Shakespeare. And I mean, I think there are some art forms which people say, "Oh, this is ferociously expensive," like opera. Well, you know, the opera companies have really tried to alleviate that by things like outdoor performances, which are free, or big screens, etc. You know, I think that actually there was a huge appetite for culture.
Is the sort of culture that you're talking about there just old-fashioned culture? Isn't it fair to say that there is plenty of culture, but it's of a different kind? You know, people going and seeing a band, people watching their favourite television show. Isn't that modern-day culture?
Well, yesterday I went to a play at the Old Vic called Future Conditional, starring Rob Brydon as a rather inspirational secondary school teacher. And I went to a matinee, and there were a lot of young people there, a lot of children, possibly on a school way, and they were definitely on a school trip because they're in uniform. And they were really enjoying it. And then last night I took my children to the Rocky Horror Show, where there was a whole generation of sort of, again, young people all dressed up madly. I mean, I have to say, my 10-year-old was slightly horrified by it, and I thought maybe it was a bit too old for him, but the others all loved it. And it was just really great fun. It was, you know, I was lucky to see two plays in a day, but one play was very provocative and an interesting look at today's educational system. And the other show was a good old romp, as a pantomime in suspenders, if you like. And people really enjoy that. I mean, people love pantomime, don't they?
Yeah. And is pantomime culture?
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. It goes back to the Italian Commedia dell'arte. Yeah, no, completely. Of course it is. It's very interesting. I mean, I don't want to sound too sort of poncy here, but it is a very remarkable piece of popular culture and contemporary culture, because it has all the sort of everyday jokes and all that, you know, the sort of current gags. I'm sure Jeremy Corbyn will appear in many pantomimes this Christmas. And then it also does very old fairy stories, and it has old traditions like men dressing up as women and women dressing up as men, and sort of very other, also interesting traditions like the evil fairy always comes out of the left-hand side of a stage left of at a pantomime. That comes from a medieval mystery play, so the devil would always come out of the left-hand side and God or Jesus would come out of the right-hand side. So it goes, pantomime harks back very, very long time.
You see, that's what I love about you, Rosie, is you know everything about everything. Is going to a One Direction concert, is that culture?
Oh, I actually take that the other day. So, yeah, it was absolutely hilarious. I mean, the women in this Take That concert, they knew every single line. Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. I mean, you know, it may not be. One Direction, I'm not quite sure I could sing you a One Direction song, but I really enjoyed seeing Take That, which is sort of One Direction from my generation. And it's kind of, you know, lovely men dancing on stage. What's wrong with that? Bring it on.
Can you sing a Take That song?
Yeah, I could.
I'm only asking. I'm not going to make you sing while you're sitting in the foyer of a hotel. Let's talk about your novel. This is your first novel, and it's called The Square.
It's called The Square, yeah.
And it's apparently fairly salacious.
Yeah, it's a saucy romp set in North London. Essentially, what happened is that I had lots and lots of contracts with newspapers and magazines and columns and this, that and the other, and then suddenly I just lost them all. These things happen if you have a freelance career. You know, one thing goes and then everything goes and you just think, oh, blimey. So I had a lot of time on my hands. And so I did a fiction writing course held by The Guardian and the University of East Anglia in Liverpool Street, in an office in Liverpool Street every Tuesday night. And I did this course for 6 months. And I started off with a blank sheet of paper and a title, The Square, and a notion that I wanted to write a comedy set in everyday life. Not set in the past, not set in somewhere like on the Ocean Wave or in a factory or something I didn't know about. It had to be, because I didn't have any time, because I also, you know, got all my kids and I did have to bring in the bacon, so I had to kind of reinvent various newspaper deals. You know, I still had to keep on working. So I didn't want to go off to the British Library forever and research, you know, banana groves in Fiji or whatever. I set my comedy in London Square, and I'm fascinated by the notion of living in a square because it's very, very communal. You know exactly what your neighbours are doing, and yet it is also very private. What is happening behind those beautiful, smart front doors? And so, yes, I wrote this comedy, which is a bit of a romp. I mean, it sort of gets going on page two, I have to say. There's a lot of shagging going on, and on kitchen tables and in halls and with neighbours and with au pairs. But it is quite amusing, I hope. You know, it's a comedy, so there's no sort of, it's done with a light touch. It was just sort of, no one wants to read a book written by someone who lives in a square saying, oh, living in a London square is so lovely and we're all so very, very privileged. Actually, I wanted to have a dystopian vision. So I painted this picture of this very lovely place to live and then threw a few grenades in of money and fame and sex. And then saw how my characters coped with it and had a few laughs along the way.
Yeah, I only say I've heard because I haven't noticed you sending me a copy to read and review.
God.
That's why.
I will send you one when I'm back. I'm getting back tonight from Hull. I will send you one tomorrow.
And somebody who has read it said you must have had some factual input there to write the scenes that you have written. Some of them, obviously, you've experienced.
Well, there is one scene where I just thought, oh, gosh, it's hard making up stuff, James. It really is hard. And I thought, I don't know what's going to happen. I staged the goings-on around things that I knew about, like a dinner party, Sunday lunch with the parents, or a residence meeting. At one point, I thought, what's going to happen in this residence meeting? So I have one of my characters, a slightly overweight woman, and she fell through the chair that she was sitting in. Now, that did happen to me in Hull years ago. I was at a dinner party, and my then-boyfriend did fall through a chair. He wasn't overweight or anything, but he just fell through the chair. And he was so embarrassed he had to leave the party. I mean, and I found it. So there are a few things. I know what you're alluding to, and that's just, you know, that is all completely invented, all the hanky-panky. But, you know, it doesn't take much imagination to invent hanky-panky, because it's a pretty well-honed human practice.
The kitchen table.
on the kitchen table. Well, it was convenient, I suppose, in the characters at the moment. Actually, I did that. A dearly, sadly departed, very close friend of mine, beautiful and glamorous. She, when she was very young, she took a job as a nanny. And this anecdote is in the book, and I've told her husband about it. And she was looking after these children, and the mother of the children was in the kitchen, and she said, would you like some coffee? And my friend Deborah said, yes, yes. And she reached up for the coffee beans, and the mother said, sorry, you will have the instant coffee. The instant coffee's for you because you're the nanny. And Deborah thought, I'm going to have your husband. And she did. I don't know if it was on the kitchen table or not, but she absolutely did. And so I have little homage to her. She died too young at the age of 41 from breast cancer, and we all miss her a lot. Anyway, so that's my homage to my dear friend Deborah. But that's the only thing directly taken from life.
You need to hope that none of these stories, any of your neighbours actually read and think, God, that is just what's been happening to us. How did she know that?
I love Bond, and I gave them all copies, and they've all read it, and they all love it, and they all were desperate to be in it.
You would hope it would be turned into a stage play.
I don't know. I mean, it could be. Yeah, it could be a sort of farce. I mean, eventually it's all farcical. It is a satire. You know, people are sort of being discovered, and hopefully, I mean, it does make people. It got some very good reviews on Amazon, and it got a terrible review on Amazon, 1 star. And it said, the reviewer said, this book is all about wealthy people playing the piano and having sex. I thought, well, yeah, actually, it is. That's quite a decent review. You know, don't give it 1 star. You're quite accurate.
Did you enjoy writing the sex scenes? Did you get a kick out of that?
Yeah, I did, actually, yeah, because it was sort of dramatic. I mean, that's one of the points of my book, is that, you know, the children in the book are all innocent. The workers in the book, the nannies and the piano teachers, are all fueling, servicing the adults, who are all essentially bored. They have got too much in their life. They've got the house, they've got the lovely job, they've got the kids, and they are bored, and they therefore want to spice up their life and inject drama into it. And I think that this is a really common thing. People think, I've achieved everything, I'm only 35, right, how can I wreck it now? You know, and I was sort of examining that. So the sex scenes are all pretty dramatic.
Well, I think that's probably sold another few hundred copies anyway, Rosie. Listen, I know you've got to go out now and socialise with the great and the good of Hull. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Oh, it's a complete pleasure. It's always lovely talking to you. Thank you so much, Jane.
That's okay. And I must remember never to offer you instant coffee again.
Touché.
Well, there we are. Thanks to Rosie Millard, who may well now be listening to this as she travels from Hull to London on the train. She did this. Did she say she wrote the sex scenes with a light touch?
She definitely did, yes.
She did, didn't she?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
She probably didn't realise. I thought about doing that. I thought about writing, because, I don't know, when I was young at school, the book we all kind of pored over was called The Valley of the Dolls.
Inflatables?
No. What's that? Shades of Grey, isn't it? It was the Shades of Grey of its day, I think. They turned it into a lousy movie. The Valley of the Dolls, I think, was... If you haven't read... You obviously have never heard of it.
No, I haven't, I'm afraid.
I'm pretty sure it's called The Valley of the Dolls. Anyway, check that out. Thanks to Rosie Millard. Sex on the kitchen table. Well, she actually didn't use the word. She used another word, didn't she?
She said the carpet one.
Shag pile.
That's the one.
Ah, right. Okay. Anyway, hello. Welcome to the program. All those of you listening on your favourite radio stations online, wherever you're listening, James Wells radio show. And, of course, if you want to get in touch, you can do it in two ways now. You can email me at jameswellradio@gmail.com, or you can call us. You can call us and we'll play your message out, some of your messages out, on next week's programme. So if you want to call and have your say, maybe about Rosie, maybe about something we've been talking about, or something completely different, call 0771 230 1771 0771 07 230 1771, and leave your message and we might include it on the programme next week. Now, is it time for a bit of music?
Yeah, we'll have some music. Oh, I like this. You'll like this.
I like this. Why will I like this?
Well, read the title.
Edelweiss.
Yeah.
Bring Me Edelweiss.
Yeah.
I seem to remember this from somewhere, don't I?
Yes.
Where do I remember this from?
I don't know, but have a look at your wall and see if you've got a gold disc.
It's not me, is it?
No.
No. I have got a... I don't think I've got a... I might have had a gold disc of this. Did I have a gold disc of this?
Yes, you did.
Did I? Mm. And you've got the video on the website?
Yes.
What is on the video? Because it's 1988 this was released.
It's just too crazy. Just go and watch it.
Really?
Hmm.
I'm not going to be embarrassed, am I?
No, you're not in the video.
Oh, I'm not in the... Oh, thank goodness for that. I thought for a minute I was in the video.
No, no, no. You're not in the video.
Edelweiss and Bring Me Edelweiss.
You still don't recognise it?
Yes, yes, I do. Now it brings back some great memories of the 80s. Edelweiss and where do you think they ever went to?
I don't know. I tried to find. If anyone knows how I can get in touch with them, let me know.
That'd be so disgusting.
What?
Just those ladies, isn't it? Check out the video. It's on our website, jamesworldradio.co.uk. Now, something a bit more serious. I did ask the question during the week about Syrian refugee problems. Now, we've seen this going on quite some time. There doesn't seem to be any solution at all. But quite a lot of people are saying, well, if people are so concerned about the plight of the Syrian refugees, why don't you do something? And I asked the question on Facebook this week, would you take a Syrian refugee into your own home? And we've had a lot of response, some good, some not so good. Barry Love says, not much love from Barry, not on your Nelly, James. Got enough problems of my own without all that foreign hassle. And it would severely curtail my life. Put them up in all those cut-back, closed forces barracks. Give all the fit men military training. Send them back to fight to get their country back. That's what Barry Love suggests. And Carol Gardner says, yes, I would. These people are fleeing their homes for fear for their lives. And they are not on a jolly. So, yes, I would. Jason Flood also says, yes, of course, I will take in the whole third world. This is not the answer. We didn't take in Afghans or Iraqis when they were at war. So why is this a European issue? It should be the Middle East problem. We can afford it. Let's bring Africa over here in our rich, spacious country. Slightly too sarcastic for my like, Jason Flood, to be honest with you. Arab countries have done a lot. You know, Libya is a very small country. It's got over a million refugees. And it's a world problem. This is a problem for the world, surely, my friend. Neil Hughes says, in theory, we shouldn't have to. There's enough empty buildings. And Richard Kay says, it does beg the question of how far would we be prepared to go? I love my privacy with my wife, and there is the worry of security with a stranger. If it was a family, we would feel more at ease. But the sacrifice of privacy is a tough one. And then what about the homeless in the UK? Should we not be looking after them? Good point, Richard. Very good point indeed. But what it does do is highlight a huge problem that not this country, not Europe, not the Middle East, but the entire world has got to come to terms with. And surely that is the problem of inequality, that some people live a really great life, you know, whatever we think, we all think we're hard done by. However much anybody has, most of us aren't happy with our lot at some time. But we're a lot better off than some, aren't we? And so this is the same old adage that people say, we produce on this planet more than enough food to feed the entire population of the planet three times over, I think it is. Yet the majority of people go hungry. And we haven't sorted these basic problems out. In the 21st century, something perhaps all of us members of the human race should think a bit more seriously about. Right, tech talk, here we go.
Right, Apple brought out their new iOS this week, iOS 9.
What is iOS 9?
It's the software that goes on your iPhone, your tablet, and so on.
Oh. Is that what little messages keep coming up on my iPhone saying, do I want to download some new whatever it is or not?
Yes.
Or would I have to pay for it?
No, it's free.
Oh, is it free? Oh, that's good. I better get it.
No. Don't do that.
No, why not? It's free. I'm going to have it.
I spent the whole day yesterday trying to recover all my emails after iOS 9 deleted them permanently.
Deleted all your emails?
Every single one for the last 5 years gone. They just didn't delete it off my phone. They downloaded it to my phone and then removed it off the email server, which is in a different country.
And so, did you ever get them back?
I did. Fortunately, I had a backup. I spent the whole day doing it. Not only that, but you know the fingerprint security?
Yeah.
You can bypass that now. There's a flaw in the security. So you can send emails, text messages, Facebook posts from somebody's locked phone.
Oh, for goodness sake.
It crashes. It's horrible. And worst of all, for everyone who doesn't have the latest iPhone that came out a few weeks ago, there are no added benefits.
There are no benefits.
So I've gone through all this pain for nothing.
Oh, well, I won't download it then. What is it called again?
iOS 9.
iOS 9. Whatever you do, don't download it because it can cause you major headaches. It's good we have tech talk on this program, isn't it?
It is. We'll wait for iOS 9.1 or whatever the fix is, but, you know.
Please. And are they aware of the problems?
They're aware of a few problems, yes.
Ah, right. Okay. Well, I think you better get in touch with Apple and tell them that I haven't had my iPhone 6 yet.
I don't think we're going to get it now. I've just slagged them off.
Ah, I might just stick with the 5S then, or whatever it is I've got.
Well, just don't put iOS 9 on.
I won't be putting anything on. I just like it as it is. Anyway, listen, it's probably time for questions to the great whale, isn't it?
Yes, we're running out of time, so I'll throw a few in as quick as I can.
Okay. And don't forget, if you want to get in touch during the day, you can, or any other time apart from emailing us here at the show or calling our new phone-in number, you can find out what that is by going to the website, jameswhaleradio.co.uk. I just hit my knee on the desk. Sorry about that. And go into the shop. Have we done an ad? We've done a couple of ads in the programme anyway, haven't we already?
Yeah.
Throw a couple in for my book and various other bits and bobs. And you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow the James Whale Radio Show on Twitter, or you can follow me at The James Whale on Twitter as well. Now, here go the questions. Yeah, Rob.
This is not going to be a quick one. Phil Wardy Ward, who created God?
Ah, yes. God was created in the beginning.
By who?
Ah, right. Well, that's a secret, and I am not at liberty to tell you. I would answer the question, but I am not allowed to say who created God.
Okay. Ken Wallace.
But one day, all will be revealed.
On this show?
Possibly. I'm saying no more than that. I've said too much already.
True. Right. Ken Wallace. As the leader of a political party, is attending the rugby match more important than looking after your constituents?
Should we do that again? Because you sounded a complete twallop.
I was trying to work out what that last word was. It's constituents.
Yes, constituency. Or constituents, yeah. Constituents. Would that be better? Hard. Constituents.
Constituents, okay.
Okay. So the question again from the top is...
Ken Wallace, as the leader of
Oh, let me do it again. Ken Wallace, who says, as a leader of a political party, is attending a rugby match more important than looking after your constituents? Well, Ken, I didn't. What party are you a leader of, Ken? I'd be interested to know. But listen, Ken, everybody is entitled to some entertainment in their life. Even you, Ken, as a leader of a political party. And if you want to attend a rugby match, I am sure that you won't be letting down your constituents spending an afternoon at a rugby match. So, Ken, you have my blessing. Next.
Your constituents. I can't say it. Your...
No, well, don't even bother because it'll be too embarrassing.
Okay.
Let's move to the next one.
Tracy Parker. Why are the Bay City Rollers getting back together again?
Just so they can annoy me.
Do they annoy you?
Well, it's not that. Suddenly I start thinking of Shang-a-Lang and it'll be going round and round in my mind. And then there's those ridiculous short trousers that, you know, ended halfway between the knee and the ankle. And then there's all that Scottish tartan all over them. Oh, yes, they annoy me, yes. I've no idea. Why are they getting back together?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't even know who they are. Ed Bredin. Why am I awake at this early hour when I should be fast asleep?
Well, it depends what early hour you're listening to this programme. If it is an early hour when you think you should be asleep, Ed, then what I suggest you do is listen to the programme again later when you're awake. Maybe on your way to work you could listen. Or maybe coming home. Maybe put it on when you're having a bath. You can listen to the James Whale Radio Show here at any time you want.
He should get one of them speaker pillows.
Speaker pillows?
Yeah, it's like a speaker embedded in the pillow. So while you're sleeping, it projects in your head.
Why don't you just put on a nice, comfortable pair of headphones?
Because then if you roll over, you get a headphone in your ear and you wake up with an earache.
Oh, okay. Right, that's it. Thank you very much indeed for listening. Thank you to Rob for putting the program together. Thank you to Rosie Millard for helping spread a little culture and give us an excuse to talk about sex on the program as well. We'll be back same time, same channel. And in the meantime, if you're a new listener, nice to have you with us. Wherever you happen to be in the world, remember, jamesworldradio.co.uk. We have another 104 hours of programs up there. In the meantime, enjoy your week.
Can I borrow that book after you finish reading it?
I'll just turn down the pages where the good bits are.
Brilliant.